Floating offshore wind has been hailed as the next big thing in renewable energy. The fact is that these floaters allow us to access high capacity factors that only deeper waters can offer. Going far offshore, however, requires special technology and innovation to ensure these systems can weather harsh conditions. To learn more about the development of the floating offshore wind sector and the technologies holding promise, I'm joined by John Salazar, founder and CEO of Gazelle Wind Power. Salazar talks us through the entrepreneurial journey from concept to commercially viable project and explains why floating wind, while less mature than fixed bottom offshore wind, holds real promise for a decarbonized energy future. I'm Pamela Larg, and this is the Energy Transitions Podcast. John, thank you so much for joining me. Today we will be talking about floating offshore wind, but before we delve into the details around the sector, tell me about Gazelle Wind Power, and I'm particularly interested in the name, how you arrived at this name, how the company came to be. Tell us more.
Thanks so much for having me here today, Pamela. I really appreciate it. It's a pleasure to see you again. Gazelle is a technology provider fully focused on the floating offshore wind industry. We are as well developing a floating offshore wind project off the coast of Aguzadura in Portugal. And as a technology provider, we are developing a truly innovative technology from the point of view of bringing down the levelized cost of electricity, focused on the floating foundations and the mooring systems, which account between 30 and 40% of a floating offshore wind project. So in a nutshell, we want to enable the access to floating offshore wind, which means going beyond 60 meters in water depth normally. We want to contribute all along our colleagues in the supply chain to make this industry affordable as well. That's 10,000 meter view, what's taking our focus now on Gazelle. And you mentioned the name as well. And I get asked a lot about the name when we are at events or speaking to new partners. The name comes from an analogy. If we go back millions of years ago, firstly, you could see big trees, and these trees had to grow tall in order to capture the sunlight and do the photosynthesis processes. Making an analogy, we see onshore wind and we see fixed bottom wind as those trees. They had to grow tall, but at the same time they had limitations. They cannot move. After the big trees, you could see dinosaurs. You could see big reptiles, and some of these were very heavy, very cumbersome. They ended up being extinct because of the impact of a meteor. And making the analogy, that's what I see is going to happen to some technologies coming from or inspired by offshore oil and gas. I would say 95% of some of the technologies inspired in offshore oil and gas in floating wind will be consolidated or will be disappearing in the next decades because there are small variations to three main designs, to tensioned platforms, to spars, to semi-submersibles, and they don't represent a step change in bringing down the LCOE. So they will not be able to get all the financing or go through the whole process that it takes to make a technology bankable. So after the big trees, after the dinosaurs, you had mammals. Some of these were light, agile, like gazelles. That's where the name comes from. I know it may sound like a cocky name, but that's why we're here. We are here to become a leader in the industry. We are here to take over this industry with our technology.
I love that, light and agile. And thank you for painting that very vivid picture for us and explaining the genesis of Gazelle Wind Power. John, why floating offshore wind? This is more of a nascent sector. It's not as mature as fixed bottom. There are some interesting and unique challenges, but also some unique opportunities. Tell us why this was your sector of choice.
Well, firstly, if you look at this from a point of view of energy transition, energy security, and if we want to stay on track with the 1.5 degrees global warming scenario from pre-industrial levels, the world needs over 300 gigawatts of floating offshore wind within the next few decades. And we need to, as you pointed out, we need to move out from a stage where we are now less than 225 megawatts of installed capacity, still at a pre-commercial stage. We need to move to that level of scale. So I strongly believe floating wind will play a very important role in the energy transition, will play that very significant piece in the puzzle. And the reason, and to me is very obvious, is because over 83% of the wind resource available is on deep waters. In order to get to deep waters beyond 60 meters water depths, from the surface level of the sea to the seabed, you need a floating foundation, you need a mooring system, and a specific type of anchoring system in order to do that. Also, when you go farther offshore, the winds are stronger, less intermittent, leading to higher capacity factors. And you can see some of the technologies piloted reaching up to 70% capacity factor. There are also advantages from the point of view of sustainability, protecting marine ecosystems. With a floating offshore wind solution, generally you don't need to do heavy perforations on the seabed. We are avoiding destroying, or you're protecting marine ecosystems in a better way than with fixed bottom solutions. And lastly, what I can say is there is a social issue, or you can facilitate coexisting at the sea, because we are not alone at sea when we are doing these type of projects. When you go farther from shore, more than 20 kilometers, you cannot see these solutions. And when you can go even farther, this will facilitate significantly the coexistence with other very important actors, very important stakeholders at sea. But these are some of the key advantages of floating offshore wind. And for us at Gazelle, it's obvious that this will be a very important industry in the energy transition. It will become one of the largest industries to contribute to this path towards sustainability and decarbonizing the world.
Indeed. To become one of the largest industries, however, there is still some growth that is required. How do we cause the sector to grow and inject some energy into that growth process? And if I can couple that with asking, do you think it will grow along the same lines as fixed bottom offshore wind?
We can see three challenges that need to be sorted in order to realize this vision, or in order to turn all this vision into action. There are still challenges to be addressed. You can see challenges, Pamela, from a permitting and planning point of view. From that policy point of view, we were mentioning a few minutes ago that we are not alone at the sea. We are coexisting with fisheries, we are coexisting with the defense, we are coexisting with tourism activities, with other industries, with other type of projects. So it's very important that there is an early engagement with all of these stakeholders when developing a floating offshore wind project. And particularly, we are considering projects at scale. That's critical. And it's very important to streamline also all the processes for permitting and planning. So that's one of the points that there needs still to be progress. The second point is there are challenges to be solved at the supply chain level from an infrastructure point of view. And there's still significant room for improvement, for innovation in terms of bringing down the level of electricity from a technology point of view. It is very difficult to fix a supply chain and to know what are going to be the requirements from an infrastructure point of view if you don't have a technology yet fixed. A very clear example is with the draft of the ports, for example. Are we going to require 6-7 meters draft at each of the ports using innovative technologies, or it will be necessary for the authorities to invest significant capital in enhancing that infrastructure and enhance the draft to 10, 11, 12 meters? That's something that at Gazelle we are trying to avoid. We have one of the lowest drafts in the industry for a floating foundation, can be between 3.5 and 7 meters, and that's opening significantly the scope, the options to our clients, because they can choose not just in one specific place to deliver these projects, but it affects significantly as well the OPEX and the economics of a project to have a reduced draft. So that's simply an example of how, in order for this industry to grow, we all need to solve issues from that permitting and planning point of view and policies, from a supply chain and infrastructure perspective, and there is significant room for improvement from that technology point of view.
John, you touched on the room for innovation, and I'd like to find out from you, at what point do you move from innovation to standardization? Where's floating offshore wind in terms of that journey?
I believe there's been, in the last few years, there's been a strong agenda to get to scale very quickly in this industry. As a consequence, we've seen some of the projects being cancelled or being delayed, or some of the economics not being that feasible. It's true that we need to get to that Henry Ford affordable car moment. We need to get to a stage where solutions can be very simple to manufacture, simple to assemble. That's very important, the pace and the quick assembly solution, that's critical. Very simple installation, very simple to operate, very simple to maintain. We need to get to that point. But at the same time, we need to ensure we have the right technologies. These technologies can level with existing infrastructure before we get to that level of standardization. There needs to be created those standards. I believe that there's still room for improvement from the floating designer point of view, from the mooring system in particular, more than the floater design. The mooring system can affect significantly, as we were saying before, not just the draft of the floater that you are using, but it can completely alter your choices when selecting a port, when defining your major component replacement strategy. That can be very, very critical. There is room for improvement in the anchoring design. There is this very heated debate now on whether to grow larger or cap the size of the wind turbine generators. That's going to have a snowball effect as this industry gets larger and larger, and there should be always space for innovation and improvements in some of the specific components, such as the one I've mentioned. At the same time, we need to get to that. Seeing this industry at scale is not going to happen in 1 year or two or three, but I strongly believe in the next decade, we're going to start to see this first large project at scale. And we need to get to that point where these solutions are mass-produced and we are able to create not only local but regional supply chains, and we are able to start developing those regions where these technologies and this industry is really needed. Because from an energy security and energy transition point of view, it's going to play a critical role in those geographies, in those countries.
Indeed. So we do have some time before we can see a drop in that LCOE.
It's going to take time. If today we see, as leaders in the industry, we see LCOE being targeted between 1 and 1.4 million euros per megawatt installed. At Gazelle, we strongly believe we can get to that million euro per megawatt installed. And we have an innovation roadmap to even lowering the LCOE to between 700,000 to 800,000 euros per megawatt installed. Indeed, that's not going to be done in 1 month or 1 year or 3 years or 5 years. It's going to be a process where some of these new innovative technologies for the mooring systems, for the anchoring systems, are piloted, are certified, the technologies become bankable, and they can be further industrialized. And that's a process. That's a process that is going to take us until the end of this decade, the commence of the next one.
John, I'd like to delve into some of the more technical details of floating offshore wind. And this is really exciting for me personally. So please don't be shy to go into that technical detail. What is the difference between floating offshore wind and fixed bottom? So let's start with a simple question before we delve into Gazelle's technology solution.
We can differentiate, Pamela, the difference between fixed and floating from an installation depth point of view, the type of foundation, the installation process. There are different materials and equipment, the processes for OEM. So for instance, touching on these four or five points, we generally speak about fixed bottom up to 50 meters or up to 60 meters maximum. Beyond 60 meters in water depths, we are speaking about floating offshore wind. The foundation types in order to place the wind turbine are totally different. In fixed bottom, you can find mainly monopiles, jackets, or gravity-based foundation types. While in floating wind, you have three main types: spar, semi-submersibles, TLPs, and new innovative technologies from the point of view of bringing down the LCOE, such as Gazelle, coming up. So the foundation types are very different. The type of materials are different too. In fixed bottom, you can see steel, concrete being used. In terms of the equipment, you need heavy lift vessels and pile drivers. While in floating, you look, for instance, at the mooring systems, the industry is switching more to our synthetic materials. You don't need that type of heavy lift vessels. The industry is looking more into anchor handling vessels and dynamic positioning systems. So it's quite different because in floating wind, the problem we are seeking to address is to keep a wind turbine safely operational, to not affect the power curve of the wind turbine by keeping it stable, and of course floating. And for that you need that floating foundation, but you need a mooring system. While if you look at fixed bottom, from an installation process point of view, these solutions require seabed drilling and they require heavy lifting operations. But in floating, we can assemble onshore and we can tow to site. So lastly, if you look at this from an OEM point of view, in fixed bottom, the access may be easier and you have more established maintenance routines. While in floating, we are now looking at new methodologies to make it more simple and reduce the cost.
When I consider the fact that you are working in water depths of 60 meters plus, that's different kinds of engineering and technical considerations that have to be taken into account. So I can imagine that the technology has to be pretty special to survive these conditions. John, tell us a little bit more specifically about Gazelle's technology solution.
Well, firstly, indeed, when you do this type of solutions, and this is again a question or a debate around standardization, you have mainly four factors. You have the wind, you have the currents, you have the tides, you have the waves, and those are the methods and conditions where you need to do the specific engineering, and as well as the type of seabed. The seabed can be more muddy, can be more rocky or more sandy, and so you need to initially invest in engineering in order to produce a very tailored solution. Gazelle is a solution that by being truly innovative from a point of view of bringing Del Sea down, what I mean is that there is further room for improvement. Because in contrast with other technologies that they were inspired by offshore oil and gas, those technologies they've had the last 25, 30 years in order to demonstrate that this industry can be made affordable at scale. So it's clear for us that we need new solutions to be piloted and to become bankable and to be commercialized. Gazelle is unique for its mooring system. The mooring system uses a counterweight connected to levers, and the floatability of the platform is separated by this mooring system, and the floatability and the stability are separated by this mooring system. That allows us to have a very lightweight solution with a significant reduced draft. The draft can be between 3.5 and 7 meters during the installation process. And that allows us to give a significant scope of options to our clients from the point of view of O&M and the point of view of developing a floating offshore wind project.
You referred to the seabed. That's obviously not a factor that needs to be taken into account with floating offshore wind. In a conversation I had recently, somebody referred to floating offshore wind as a truly democratized form of energy because there's all of this coastline and there's no longer the limitations of seabed to take into account. What are your thoughts on that? Is this truly a democratized form of energy?
The energy transition is a big puzzle, and we are obsessed on delivering best-in-class product for that piece to bring down the LCOE in floating wind. But at some point, we will need to interconnect this piece with other pieces. For example, we could lever on all these technologies we are developing, on all the infrastructure, on the supply chains to produce green hydrogen, to produce green ammonia. We can couple this type of solution with wave energy, with long-duration energy storage solutions. We can create marine ecosystems, or we can protect the marine ecosystems, and we can create synergies with other industries connected to sustainability, to protecting the environment. That's why I see that, indeed, this could be we use the word democratic, no? Industry from that point of view. Definitely, there's a huge potential. If we look at this from resource point of view, you see the amount of water that there is on this planet, on this jewel we are living, in contrast to land, and all those resources haven't been used yet. At the same time, we need to use them in a sustainable way. We need to protect them because they play a very important role in making this planet self-sustainable.
I'd like to find out from you: are there any particular regions or should I say, oceans that Gazelle is looking to move into with potential future pilot projects?
I would say that we see three big regions. Firstly, we see Europe. If we focus on Southern Europe, countries like Portugal, Spain, Italy, France, Greece coming up, you see in the UK, the Celtic Sea, the North Sea, you see some pockets as well in Norway, in Sweden, Baltic Sea. So that would be a first region. Moving to Asia, for countries like Japan, South Korea, this will become an essential industry from an energy transition point of view and from an energy security point of view. And these are countries that can lever on their existing shipbuilding supply chains. That's one of the particularities of Gazelle technology. And our technology can be mass produced using a flat panel line in a shipyard that is being used now, for example, to mass produce vessels. In that region, you see countries like Taiwan, you see Australia, you will see the Philippines with average water depths of 300 meters coming up. Of course, the South China Sea. So that's going to be, if not the largest, one of the largest regions, all this part of the Far East and Asia Pacific. And lastly, I see as a third region, the Americas, particularly the West Coast of the United States, places like Brazil and Colombia will emerge. You see also some pockets in Canada, in Nova Scotia, in Newfoundland. This is a global industry. And as I was alluding before, we need to deliver over 300 gigawatts of floating offshore wind in the next 2.5 decades. We want to stay on track with that global warming scenario from pre-industrial levels. So we need to act with urgency.
Indeed. John, I want to pivot slightly to the journey that Gazelle has been on. And obviously, you've taken Gazelle on this journey of developing from an idea to where it is now. Talk to us about that journey and how you move from a concept to something that's commercially viable. And on a more personal level, what drives you and what keeps you motivated in the space?
I have a background as an engineer. I met the inventor of Gazelle technology when I was 7 years old. He's a brilliant mind. He used to design the vessels for the America's Cup for the Spanish team. He was the lead hydrodynamic engineer. And he inspired me to afterwards become an engineer, a COM electrical software engineer, and start my career in a big four and in banking. But at the same time, I was already doing small deals, small businesses. And those small businesses, some of them didn't go well, others indeed went well. The last one went well. One was one of the largest financial literacy communities in Spanish-speaking language. And as an entrepreneur, I've always been focused on solving problems. And I believe that climate change, the production and consumption of sustainable energy is now one of the biggest problems that humanity faces. I believe a lot in staying focused, in focusing on the few, not the many. So I decided to exit the previous group of companies, and I became the first investor in Gazelle. I wanted to help this person that I met when I was 7 years old, which is our chief innovation officer, Dr. Antonio Garcia. And in the process, I realized that indeed this industry can and will play a very significant role in accelerating the energy transition. For the reasons I alluded before, all the uncaptured potential of wind in deep waters, and all the adjacent industries that will be able to be fostered, will be able to be enhanced thanks to floating offshore wind. So that's part of Pamela. That's part of my journey as an entrepreneur. This is an industry where the barriers to entry are quite high, but what makes me awake is to push this industry, is to see the floating offshore industry being a massive global industry within all these regions we were mentioning before, and truly seeing this industry at affordable scale.
John, as an engineer, a problem solver, and an entrepreneur, I am keen to know, what are you reading at the moment, or what could you recommend?
Firstly, I believe a lot in taking action. To take action, either you need some doses of inspiration or desperation, and that will be your choice. And I believe books can inspire you. At the moment, I'm reading for the second time the biography of Elon Musk, the one that was recently published. And I strongly recommend that one to any entrepreneur to see the type of problems that Elon Musk faced when developing Tesla, when developing SpaceX. It's a very, very interesting book. I haven't started that one, but I was gifted The Art of the Deal from Donald Trump. I haven't started with that one yet, but that will be next. I believe, again, in taking that action, because when you have that inspiration, the path is not streamlined. There is not a standard process. And the process is done, it's just like the water. When the water is moving, it's clear. When water is stuck, it smells. So you need to take a lot of action as an entrepreneur, because while you have that vision, which maybe from 0 to 10, your point 10, where you want to reach, it's likely that you only know how to get to point 1 or to point 2. But once you get to point 2, you know how to get to point 3. You may not know what are the steps 5, 6, 7, but as long as you have that vision, and as long as you know what's the next step, the following ones will the next steps will follow.
Thank you for sharing that wisdom with us. I just have one final question for you, John, and that is, what is next for Gazelle? What is your focus for the near, medium, and long-term future?
We've just had three intense days of our annual gathering. We've done this in Viana do Castelo in Portugal, where we just opened our new office. We have colleagues coming from as far as Lisboa, Porto, Madrid, the UK, some colleagues from Japan. So we had an annual gathering. We are very focused now on delivering a project on the coast of Aguçadura in Portugal. That's a 2-megawatt demonstrator project where we are going to be piloting the principle of Gazelle technology, truly innovative mooring system. We'll be as well trialing some of the key aspects towards industrialization as part of this pilot. So I would say this is one of our key objectives now, as long as delivering initial pre-FEEDs and FEED contracts for clients in some of the regions that I mentioned. A strong focus now on delivering this project in Portugal.
Well, I certainly will be keeping an eye on that. And the next time I do visit the beautiful Viana do Castelo, I will let you know. But John, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been an absolute pleasure to get your insights.
Thanks for having me, Pamela.
And thank you so much to our listeners. Until next time. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Energy Transitions Podcast, brought to you by Enlit and Friends. That's a wrap from me, Pamela Log, and our producer, Kamo Motse. We hope you can join us next time. Visit enlit.world or subscribe for more episodes.